Just Waiting Till the Shine Wears Off. Written by Pixie Power and recorded by Tipsy Kitty. Fandom 17. Summary. How he managed to end up on a field team equipped with not much more than an incandescent flashlight and Kim Mingyu is absolutely beyond Sungwan, yet simultaneously completely expected. When the first red beetle skitters over his foot as he walks through the first cavern, Sungwan wonders why he agreed to do fieldwork out here in the first place, but he figures it'll be worth the trouble when he gets to compile his anthropological archaeology research and earn the Natural History Museum its second grant. The prep was easy enough. The paperwork and the permits. Even the vaccinations and the physical with Sungchul. His whole academic career has been leading up to this anyway. Fighting tooth and nail to be taken seriously, not only by his peers, but his mentors and his contemporaries in the field. By his professors when he studied. And eventually, his students. It felt right. Like he was meant to do this. Hansala! Hansala! Sungwan yells, arms wrapped around his folio to keep his papers from flying out into the campus square as he dashes toward his friend. A stray pamphlet flutters to Hansel's feet, and he grins when he picks it up and replaces it atop Sungwan's haphazard pile. Three guesses? He asks, before Sungwan can get a word out edgewise, rolling his neck in a stretch as if to prepare. Sungwan sighs impatiently, but allows it. Quickly. Hansel pretends to ruminate. Your cordwainer has new wingtips in. Be serious. All right, let's see. Chen gave up being Jisoo's assistant and is finally going to work with you, Hansel offers, an eyebrow raised half-hopefully. Wistful. And now, unfortunately, thinking about a world in which that were true, Sungwan mutters, No, this game isn't fun anymore. Can I just tell you now? Letting out a laugh, Hansel nods. Two is now three. Thank goodness you aren't an applied mathematics scholar. Go on. He smiles. Sungwan pulls a face. Nothing against applied mathematics, but dear God, he couldn't imagine crunching numbers all day. Even if it were for engineering or industry. The only abacus he wants to look at is the soupan Minghao got him for Christmas last year, and it sits in a place of pride on his desk, clear of the rest of his clutter. But that's beside the point. The point being, the committee's asked me to take part in an excavation in the caverns out in Danyangun. Some antiquarian out there discovered an artifact, some homewares, I think, and tried to peddle them off as curios. But it caught the interest of the department, and they think it aligns quite closely with my research. I leave in 2 weeks, over the first part of summer holiday. Oh, that'll give you the lift you need to reach out to the foundation for the grant, right? That's amazing, Sungwan. I'm so happy for you, Hansel says sincerely, clasping what he can of Sungwan's free hand. The sentiment is appreciated, as Sungwan can barely contain his excitement. Finally. A well-funded excavation fielded by, from what he could tell from skimming his briefing pamphlet, a top team of academics and professionals, getting to do what he loves and make something of it greater than himself. After all that, how he managed to end up on a field team equipped with not much more than an incandescent flashlight and Kim Mingyu is absolutely beyond Sungwan, yet simultaneously completely expected. Life has not been known to cut him a break. Not for a long while. They're at least able to work separately, even if Sungwan can hear Mingyu humming under his breath from where Sungwan drops his excavation markers, because of how sound carries in the cave. Frankly, Sungwan has been proud for 2 years of his ability to reduce Kim Mingyu to background noise. After being a panelist on Mingyu's all but disastrous faculty interview, Sungwan needed to distance himself from the mutual mortification and distaste. And he can be professional. They can work near one another. It's with that might pose a problem or two. So when there's a tremor underfoot, a few hours later, followed by the thunderous sound of rocks and debris sliding down to the cave entrance, and Sungwan watches the second red beetle of the day spread its shimmering wings and flitter up and out of the only opening in sight, 10 centimeters wide and 15 meters up, Sun Quan rapidly decides all this might no longer be worth the trouble or threat to life. No, 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 Sun Quan says despairingly, using the butt of his flashlight to try and chip at the crumbled rock slide to no avail. The only way out is through. Mingyu's voice is sure, but a little small, and Sun Quan knows it's because his own face is furious. He also knows that Kim Mingyu knows that this is the very last thing he wants to hear, especially from him. You've got to be fucking joking, mutters Sun Quan. When he turns around, Mingyu is sitting on the floor, two long legs spread wide like a gymnast stretch, and Sun Quan kind of wants to slam his face into the rock-covered opening, see if that'll do the trick. Hand me your bag, Mingyu says. Sun Quan clutches his satchel closer to his chest and frowns. Come again? We don't know how long we'll be in here. Hand me your bag. We need to take inventory. Surprisingly level-headed, if a little rudimentary, Sun Quan reluctantly hands Mingyu his bag, but keeps his eyes trained on him as he lays out their belongings into the sun-striped section of the floor. Mingyu smooths out their map onto the ground between his spread legs, tracing pathways with his fingers. It only takes a few minutes, Mingyu murmuring softly to himself and scribbling in his pocket journal, marking quietly and then folding things back up closely to how Sun Quan originally had them organized, which is the least he can do, frankly. Your canteen is full, and I have two bags of mixed nuts, one for each of us. That should last us as we move south until we hit the next checkpoint, where we'll be able to head up the approved entry drop zone and make it back to camp, Mingyu says, ostensibly writing the plan down in the little journal, Sun Quan eyeing the camel brown smallness of it dwarfed in his hand. It's hard to disagree, so Sun Quan doesn't. He presses his tongue into the side of his cheek and bites it back. Bites back his frustration and his anger and, worst of all, most importantly of all, his rising fear, and says, Okay, then we better get going. The darkness is all-encompassing, despite the count of Sun Quan's watch only striking 10 in the morning. The incandescent bulb in his flashlight only reaches so far in front of them, and Mingyu has to slow his long strides to stay within its rays, steps ahead of Sun Quan. The lack of sun renders everything humid and dank, mildewy water dripping down the tunnel walls, and Sun Quan hates that he's already sweaty in his cotton button-down, even after only an hour and a half or so of mostly quiet walking. He puts the pommel of the flashlight in his mouth to roll up his sleeves a little, knows the flashlight swings down toward his feet when he looks up at his sleeves, causing Mingyu to turn his head to see why. Mingyu's eyes widen at the sight of him, and he opens his mouth and shuts it, swiveling his head back around without saying whatever is clearly on his mind about Sun Quan's choices, or asking if he should hold the light instead. He slows a little, though, and falls into step with Sun Quan. Sun Quan's heart rate is rising, he can feel it, and there's this itch under his skin that he can't quite figure out how to scratch. He glances up at Mingyu's face, which is perfectly neutral. Listen, Mingyu Shi, Yang is fine, Mingyu interrupts, offering Sun Quan a small smile. We've worked together long enough. Long enough, too long. Sun Quan can hardly tell the difference at this point. I'd rather not. He tries to ignore the tightness in his stomach at how, in the light of Sun Quan's flashlight, Mingyu's still smiling but his eyes go flat like a little candle extinguishing. That's fine, Sun Quan Chi, if it makes you more comfortable. I'll be frank with you, on the whole, I am not very comfortable right now, and I can't discern whether that has more to do with present company or the fact that, oh, I don't know, we're stuck in a maze of caves. So forgive me for being a little tense. As soon as the words leave Sun Quan's mouth, he winces. For all his prior unprofessionalism under the guise of charm, Mingyu has proven awfully handy so far, and not quite as insufferable as Sun Quan had convinced himself he was. Sun Quan sighs. I'm sorry. Historically, I am not the best under pressure. Mingyu raises an eyebrow and rubs at his eyes theatrically, blinking hard and squinting at Sun Quan. Bu Sun Quan Shi, Is that you, admitting a fault? Involuntarily, Sun Quan snorts and shoves at Ming Yu's arm, trying not to laugh. Ming Yu, annoyingly, physically does not waver. But the sparkle is back in his eye, and Sun Quan can live with that, even if Ming Yu is needlessly, maybe even offensively, tall for an academic. Don't get used to it. Sun Quan sniffs exaggeratedly. Grinning, Ming Yu says, I'll try to contain myself. This trip is full of firsts for the both of us, then, Sun Quan says, raising one eyebrow and letting one side of his mouth quirk up in a way he hopes reads only bemused. Like this conversation. What do you mean? Sun Quan asks warily. Ming Yu shrugs, throwing Sun Quan that little tight-mouthed smile again. I mean, before this moment, I could count the words you said to me in the past year and a half on both hands, Sun Quan Chi. The day you asked me to hand you the volume on patterns of culture without realizing it was me went into my agenda as a notable event. His tone is light, almost joking, but Sun Quan's not laughing. He knows he's been curt, but wasn't going for standoffish, necessarily. Just acting in the interest of self-preservation. Too many times Sun Quan has been too accommodating to people who undermined him, outright stole his work, didn't treat him like a peer, took advantage of his kindness, and he isn't about to make that mistake again. Not with so much on the line. But still, there's a difference between reticent and rude, succinct and spiteful. A cavernous one. So Sun Quan supposes he can throw Ming Yu a bone. At least to make the time they have to spend here a little more bearable. All right then, Ming Yu Shi, Sun Quan says. Let's talk. Sun Quan is beginning to get a strange feeling about this place. Firstly, he doesn't remember ever telling Ming Yu to fill every beat of silence between them with sound. Even if Ming Yu does bounce on the balls of his feet when he talks about his research. Which is actually somewhat interesting. Not that Sun Quan would ever admit it. It makes sense, considering they're in the same department, and have bodies of work that overlap enough to get them placed on the same excavation expedition. But a few commonalities here and there do not a foundation make, and he knows he's not offering much in return. Despite all that, though, Ming Yu does keep allowing him to pause, watching Sun Quan run his brush over cleared areas atop broken-off stalagmites, and place more excavation markers where he sees potential artifacts buried. But as they meander through each tunnel, and exit out into increasingly wider cave openings, things are different, less buried. Something about it doesn't feel correct, but Sun Quan doesn't know enough about geology to refute it. That he'll leave to Ji-hun. He peers closer to a small organic shelf in the wall, shines his flashlight into where something shiny glints in the opening, but he can't quite reach it to see. Ming Yu's arms are longer than Sun Quan's. Maybe he can pull it out if he's sitting on top. Just extract the specimen with tongs without excavation. Sun Quan has a handful of little jars that would be perfect to hold on to it. Ming Yu Shi, come look at this. The sound pongs around, even though Sun Quan asked quietly, yet he gets no response. Ming Yu Shi? Sun Quan's voice echoes cleanly off the cave walls, whatever mineral composites the surfaces clearly not very porous or absorbent, or something like that. Ming Yu mentions it in the last cavern. Sun Quan thinks about potential predators in this climb. Tries to remember Wanu's briefing on flora and troglofauna in the region, and takes a step back to where Ming Yu is. Or was. Ming Yu! Sun Quan shouts, nearly dropping his bag as he breaks out into a run toward where Ming Yu is gazing at a patinated bracelet, gathering his fingers to slip it over his wrist. Are you out of your fucking mind? You look at tetanus. Look at it. That thing is probably poisonous. He ungraciously knocks the bracelet to the ground with the head of his flashlight, and as it rolls in a ring along the gritty floor, the sound of it is not right. Even with all the stone shards and grime, it's too bright, like chrome gold on ceramic tile, and Mingyu's eyes follow it as it wobbles to a stop. If you had asked Bu Sangguan if curses were real when he was writing the paper that got him placed on this expedition, he would have laughed. But from what he's seen now, he's not so sure. Sangguan circles Mingyu's wrist with his fingers, or tries to. Mingyu's arms are deceptively built in his button-up shirt, and Sangguan pushes up one sleeve slightly to inspect the skin that nearly brushed the bracelet. It's dusty, of course, and he runs a thumb firmly over the vein to make sure nothing irritating is spreading up Mingyu's skin. "I turn my back for 1 second, Kim Mingyu," Sangguan starts with a hiss, and wills his voice to sound less frantic and more reproachful. His hands are small in Mingyu's as he turns over Mingyu's broad palms, and, as suspected, Mingyu's fingertips look a little raw, though whether that's from the splintering wood of the small chest open in front of them, or from holding the bracelet itself, remains to be seen. Weirder still is that Mingyu hasn't said a word. His gaze seems far away, and the path of his eyes is stuck on the glint of the bracelet some 6 meters away. Sangguan's jaw tightens, but his next reprimand dies in his throat, and he rummages in his bag for their canteen. "Young?" he tries. Mingyu's eyes blink languidly, and Sangguan unscrews the cap of the canteen purposely slowly, letting the metal threads ring against each other to try and pull his attention. "Young, drink some water, please," Sangguan grits out, and manages not to roll his eyes with either the honorific or the plea. If the situation weren't so dire, he would probably physically pat himself on the back. But as it stands, Kim Mingyu is Sungguan's best chance at getting out of this godforsaken tomb, and he has worked too hard, done too much research, to let this man ruin everything. The fact of the matter is becoming increasingly obvious. They do it together, or not at all. A shuddering breath pulls into Mingyu's chest, and Sangguan lets out a breath of his own when Mingyu takes the canteen from him. Sangguan stares at Mingyu's face as he drinks, takes in the bob of his throat and the shape of his jaw, up to his eyes, which look a lot clearer now. So Sangguan looks away, takes a step down their path. Mingyu lets out a little gasp when he swallows, but Sangguan doesn't look back, just waits a beat. "I'm sorry," Mingyu says, voice hoarse. "That's unexpected." Sangguan sets the flashlight down onto a ledge and crosses his arms, trying to channel stern energy, like the dean of social sciences after midterm exams. He says firmly, half into the wall, "Do you realize how dangerous that was? You have no idea what that thing could have done to you. You could have gotten hurt." And if Mingyu had gotten hurt, well, Sangguan doesn't want to think about that. At least Mingyu has the wherewithal to look chastised, even as Sangguan feels his cheeks heat up. "We would never get out of here, for starters," he thinks. "I don't know what happened. It just called to me," Mingyu says dazedly, and takes another sip from the canteen. He looks down at it, then back up with panicked eyes at Sangguan. His voice is small when he admits, "I drank most of this." "I asked you to," Sangguan says with finality, like that ends the conversation. It seems like it does. Mingyu takes a few steps, tucks the canteen back into Sungguan's bag, then picks up Sungguan's flashlight from the ledge. Being taller, the light throws further, and Sangguan feels the corners of his mouth tuck into his cheeks, the ghost of a smile. Useful is all it is. He uses his now free hand to pull out their map, knocking his shoulder against Mingyu's chest to wordlessly pull the light closer. Sangguan exhales a frustrated puff of air as he walks their path with his fingertips. They're still at least several hours away from where the projected exit is, if it's even still there, uncovered by rock slides or booby traps or whatever the fuck kind of surprises this place has in store for them, and they're already almost out of water. Sangguan doesn't glance up at Mingyu, knows he's looking anyway, and rolls up the map tightly, binding the little leather cord in a neat bow. We need to get to the waterfall due southwest of here. Moving water carries less risk, and if we aren't going to eat much, we at least need to stay hydrated. Mingyu sighs deeply. Resigned, I know, that Sungguan is starting to lack the energy to fight. So they look at Mingyu's compass and they walk on. They move in relative silence, the only sound their footfalls echoing down the seemingly endless ravines, hands running lightly over the walls for something to hold on to. After what seems like hours, and probably is, Mingyu says, "We have to stop." "Stop what?" Sungguan says, ignoring the weariness in his own voice. He absentmindedly toys with the fray of his shirt sleeve, ragged from where it caught on some rocks when he and Mingyu had to crawl through an opening barely the width of their shoulders to keep following the compass. Grabbing for Sungguan's arm, Mingyu catches his wrist with the warm, calloused hand. "Stop walking. We need to take a break. The waterfall should only be a few minutes from here if we keep routing west, and then I think we should eat and try to sleep." This, unfortunately, makes sense, and just the word sleep makes Sungguan's eyes heavy with exhaustion and reminds him of just how badly his feet ache in his steel-toed boots. "Okay," he says, and squints a few feet in front of him, where the shadows in the dust look even more tenebrous than they did a moment ago. Sungguan shakes his flashlight, the incandescent bulb flickering weakly in his hand, before hissing softly and dying in his hand, plunging himself and Mingyu into darkness. Less okay. From steps away, Mingyu takes a deep breath, and Sungguan hears him crack his knuckles. "Hang on," Mingyu's disembodied voice says, in a tone Sungguan imagines is supposed to be reassuring. And for a brief moment, Sungguan does fantasize about Kim Mingyu and his giant hands, envisions Mingyu snapping his neck and ending this worsening nightmare. Luckily enough, the next best thing happens, and there's a tear of paper, a few little striking sounds and a flicker, and suddenly there's a little fire between them, down where Mingyu is crouched. He lets out a quiet chirp of success and grins up at Sungguan, who raises his eyebrows approvingly. Sungguan looks around, using his legs to roll a log closer to the fire, sweeping thankfully dry kindling to feed the flames. He rummages around in his bag and retrieves Mingyu's bags of nuts, tosses one to Mingyu, who does not catch it, but picks it up and dusts it off on his almost equally dusty shirt. Sungguan lets out a ragged groan of relief when he takes a seat on the boulder, feeling all his bones settle into place. This has been a long day. Moving to sit down across from Sungguan on the log, Mingyu winces and gets up slightly, sweeping a hand over the surface, dusting it off for splinters and God knows what else. Humming a little, Sungguan says, "Should have done that before you sat down." Mingyu sighs neutrally and nods. "Probably, but hindsight is 20/20. I'll look next time." And something about the simple agreement rubs Sungguan the wrong way, and it's not just the insinuation that there'll be a next time in this cavern. It's more than anything the plain way Mingyu acquiesces to his suggestion, rather than pushing back. Sungguan can't stand it, the not knowing, the not understanding. He bursts out, quiet but insistent. "Why now do you listen to me, now that we're trapped in an endless maze of history and horror? It only took 2 years of being on the board together for you to even look me in the eye with any regularity." "What are you talking about, Sungguan? I always listen to you. I don't know if you've noticed, but I don't care that you're younger than me. You have more experience and insight than anyone else on this team, in our whole department even. And you think no one is out there pounding pavement and standing up for you besides you. But it's not true. You have this chip on your shoulder, but you never even gave me a chance to look at the crags." Sungguan blinks, and Mingyu's cheeks are pink, and he's looking down toward their little fire, giving the dusty boots at the end of his long legs a very focused stare. A stare Sungguan knows intimately. The anywhere but at you stare. And something falls into place, fits together and unlocks like a key in an old chest. Mingyu Hyung, Sun Guan starts carefully, and observes the way the glow brightens on Mingyu's ears and cheeks. One could attempt to attribute it to the heat of the fire, but the ambient cold around them offsets it too much for that to be the case. Can you tell me what happened at your faculty panel? And he doesn't need to elaborate, because the way Mingyu looks up at Sun Guan, eyes round and face drawn, tells him he knows exactly what he's talking about. Out of professional courtesy, Sun Guan laughs, his fullest, most inappropriate cackle, and it pongs around stalactites when he wheezes. You think we're still upholding standards of professional courtesy here? After everything we've gone through the last 2 days? God, that's cute. Mingyu's face burns red like the clay caked into their boots, and Sun Guan meant it in a precious sort of way, but Mingyu looks all gold in the flickering embers, and he's wearing that insufferably earnest face he always wears. So he supposes his bases would be covered, were Sun Guan to expand the intended meaning. Or whatever. Is that day really why our interactions are so terse? Shrugging, Sun Guan considers the question. Mingyu spent the whole hour of his research presentation behind the podium, body language tense as could be, hands gripping the mahogany of the podium and pointedly refusing to look at Sun Guan, both the closest panelist and the youngest by far. And when his presentation was over, while the content during was stellar, well researched and charismatically delivered, all that preparation went away when it came time for the question and answer portion. And then he had all this personality, and that bright smile, no matter what Sun Guan threw his way, and he had to test it, see just how far he could push. Not Sun Guan's finest quality. You grilled me for 15 straight minutes, Sun Guan. You showed me intimately that you didn't think I was capable of handling the volume of research your department conducts. And I didn't know why, when you pitched so soft to the person who went before me. Tell me his research was better than mine, more thorough, or better presented. It wasn't. Not by a long shot. Sun Guan's silence answers that question, until he says, dropping honorifics, you couldn't even look at me. What was I supposed to think, Mingyu? Mingyu, to his credit, doesn't rise to the bait, and instead just gazes long into Sun Guan's eyes. Sun Guan just recrosses his legs and stares right back, ignoring the aching heat running magma down his spine at the look on Mingyu's face. And then your handshake was so weak, like you couldn't even show me respect after all that fighting. My hands were sweaty. I was embarrassed. You kept looking at me like that, and I didn't think I could ever recover from the unbelievable bingo of hard-on in an academic professional setting, and your subsequent behavior showed me that I was absolutely right to think that, Mingyu says, hibiscus pink. Sun Guan opens his mouth to reply, but the only sound that comes out is a choked laugh, a punch of an exhale. Sorry, what? Mingyu's eyes widen impossibly more. Then, and he finally snaps his mouth shut, just to open it again to say, voice tight, what do you mean, what? Did you say, did you not know? They talk over each other, then pause together. Their gaze holds, lips parted half through their jumble of phrases, and Sun Guan's eyes flick down to where Mingyu's chest is heaving with labored breaths under his half-open shirt. Do I really have to... Wait, Mingyu, shut up. Sun Guan stands, taking quick steps to kneel at Mingyu's side, leaning in close. What? I... Hyung, you said you listened to me. Then listen. He reaches up and starts to unbutton Mingyu's shirt, pushing his suspenders off his shoulders to take the shirt off entirely, and Mingyu stammers unintelligibly, eyes huge, a shiver racking him when Sun Guan runs the flat of his hand over his pectoral and down his right arm, where there's a shimmery soft oxidized violet climbing up his skin in a pattern like vines growing. It's almost like the pastel pallor of veins under skin, but such a different hue, especially against the gold tones of Mingyu's skin. Sun Guan feels lucky he noticed it. It's because of the bracelet. You probably held it long enough for the curse to permeate your skin, even if you didn't put it on. And thank God you didn't, Sun Guan mutters, gently turning Mingyu's arm in his hands.
You said it was probably poison. You didn't say anything about a curse, Mingyu says, eyes glued to Sun Guan's hands, tracing the spidering purple pattern where the newest branches threatened to crawl over his shoulder and onto his chest. It has to be contained before it gets anywhere even close to Mingyu's vital organs.
Sun Guan rummages through his bag to ensure Mingyu's other shirt, the clean brown one, is still folded safely inside. The tears and stains on the one in his hand mean Mingyu's unlikely to miss it anyway. One end of the fabric in his teeth, Sun Guan grits out,
"Wishful thinking. What the fuck do I know about poisons or curses? My specialty is classifying anthropological artifacts. And also, need I remind you, curses aren't real."
He tries to say it with confidence, punctuates it with the tear of the linen, pulling it taut to get one long strip of it from the hem of the shirt.
"This is gonna feel tight, so take deep breaths, okay?"
Mingyu nods, and Sun Guan presses a little ball of fabric to his skin at the brachial artery, wrapping the strip around twice and holding the ends tight where the knot will go. Sun Guan meets his eyes with a question, and Mingyu flexes his arm a little and nods again. So Sun Guan ties a tidy square knot and watches with relief as the pastel violet fades out a little bit above the half tourniquet, descending back a little toward Mingyu's elbow.
"Wow," Mingyu says, and his eyes look a little glassy.
Sun Guan's mouth presses into a line with uneasy satisfaction. Sockman's emergency field training was thorough, but it was still no later than a week ago, and he hopes beyond hope that the restraint holds, that he can protect Mingyu as long as it takes.
"You know any other good tricks?"
Mingyu says, and the smirky giggle he lets out makes Sun Guan swallow, just to give himself something to do, buy himself some more time.
"Wouldn't you like to know?"
Sun Guan retorts, a beat too late. Mingyu hums in the affirmative.
"I would, actually."
And it's Sun Guan's turn to pinken. Mingyu's face is earnest now, and there's something so awful about how easily he slips from teasing to truthful, how easily sincerity comes to him, because it means Sun Guan has been butting against this man for years over perceived slights. And either he figured himself out over the years, or Sun Guan had it wrong from the beginning.
"Well, if we get out of here, I'll show you sometime. How's that?"
Sun Guan mutters, standing up and dusting off his knees as an excuse to not look Mingyu in the eye. Or in the bare chest. They need to sleep, anyway.
"When?"
Mingyu says. Sun Guan rolls his shoulders, trying to stretch out his screaming muscles.
"When what?"
"When we get out of here, you'll show me.
Promise?"
Blinking in surprise, Sun Guan turns to see Mingyu's eyes like saucers, sleepy and sincere, glowing up at him with a warmth not unlike the fire, now a step away from Mingyu and four away from Sun Guan. Sun Guan shoves the empty bag from his mixed nut dinner into his satchel, along with whatever emotion he just experienced. And he wasn't going to honor the request with a response, but when Sun Guan opens his mouth, he finds himself murmuring,
"Sure, young, I promise."
As he curls up between the fire and the boulder, Sun Guan adds like an afterthought,
"Don't forget to put your clean shirt on before you sleep. I don't know what kind of fucking poison beetles are out here. Probably cursed beetles."
Mingyu's responding laugh is sleepy and low.
"Those pretty iridescent red ones weren't on Wanu's specimen briefing."
"They are kind of pretty," Sun Guan thinks. "If beetles can be cursed, it's definitely those."
"Not everything pretty is bad for you,"
Mingyu yawns in a considering tone. "Good night, Sun Guan Chi."
"Good night, Young,"
Sun Guan says quietly. He opens one eye just slightly, peering through his eyelashes to catch a little smile flickering over Mingyu's face as he snuffs out the fire, then shuts his eyes tight.
Their canteen is full when Sun Quan wakes up. Soft diffused light spread over the cavern, and he wastes no time chiding Ming Yu about it.
"You went down to the waterfall without me,"
Sun Quan grumbles, rubbing his eyes and letting the image of Ming Yu, wet hair and puppy frown, burn like embers into his retinas as the first thing he absorbs. It's too much, honestly, and Sun Quan wishes he could just go back to sleep and let the beetles take him.
"Yes?"
Ming Yu says warily. Sun Quan sits up fully, glaring at Ming Yu.
"That was dumb of you.
If I'd known you wanted to come, I wouldn't have gone to all that risk making you disgruntled," Ming Yu says, a little bit of bite to it. He shakes his head and steals his gaze, as though a good night's sleep and a drink of fresh water was all he needed to get him back into fighting shape. Sun Quan rolls his eyes.
"No, I'm disgruntled because it was a stupid idea to climb down there alone with your arm like this. I don't want you aggravating it and getting injured any worse. You're being reckless."
This quietens Ming Yu, and he finally looks chastised.
"Oh. Oh, indeed."
Satisfied with his victory, Sun Quan unscrews the cap of the canteen and takes a sip, the cool water rushing through his body like he's the cavern and it's back in the waterfall.
"Thank you,"
he remembers to say, and Ming Yu nods, failing to stifle a grin. Sun Quan pulls a face, sticking out his tongue at Ming Yu, who laughs.
"Awful."
He does his stretching routine, groaning when he bends over to touch his toes, but Sun Quan is trying not to strain himself any more than physically necessary. When he sees the state of his limbs, he knows Sung Chul is going to look at him with that disappointed face, but Sun Quan thinks maybe he deserves a pass this time. Sun Quan stands up and shakes out his legs, and swears he sees Ming Yu whip his head around to pointedly not look at him, but Sun Quan is long past trying to understand Kim Ming Yu.
"According to our map, we're only a few hours from the exit,"
Ming Yu says hopefully. This time yesterday, Sun Quan thinks he would have demanded to see the map himself, hold the compass, do it all. But now he just nods resolutely and suggests, "It's supposed to be a bit deeper in before we emerge, right? We can't rely on ambient light all afternoon. Do you think we could make a torch or something?" Ming Yu hums thoughtfully.
"Probably.
Even though I suspect the royal we just means, you please, Ming Yu."
"Well, you'd be wrong,"
Sun Quan huffs, cracking a smile at the surprise on Ming Yu's face.
"I wouldn't say please."
Laughing, Ming Yu says,
"That's the Busun Quan we know and love,"
and drops to his knees, tying more of yesterday's shirt to the top of a decent-sized stick, and rolling it in the sticky sap piling below a stalactite. It's not methodical or anything, but there's a finesse to it that's appealing.
Not appealing, but attractive.
Not attractive, just... got it, Ming Yu declares, his face turned up triumphant and glowing all elated in the light of his torch.
"Let's go.
The sooner we get going, the sooner we're out of here." And he's right, logically and factually. But something about it gives Sun Quan pause. It stays in the back of his mind, an uncharacteristic finality and a wistfulness to it that thrums under Sun Quan's skin, even as he and Ming Yu walk for hours, chattering all the while. It's nice to fill the silence with jokes and laughter despite their situation. There's some sort of buoyancy about it, and yet a weight settles into Sun Quan's body, both at once. Sun Quan's eyes widen as he lets out a choked shriek when Ming Yu stops them quietly, pressing his palm against the wall of the cave and letting a scarlet-red winged beetle scuttle across his hand. He picks it up, giving it a gentle ride on the back of his hand, fingers delicate as he holds it up to the light. The look on Ming Yu's face, awed and fascinated, and the way his expression doesn't change when he shows it to Sun Quan, makes Sun Quan chew on his bottom lip. He doesn't want to break this moment. He wants to pick it up with specimen tongs, brush off the dust, preserve it forever. Reaching into his bag, Sun Quan fishes out a little jar, the one with the mesh texture lid, and opens it, lets Ming Yu carefully usher it inside before tightening the lid and handing it over. San Guan wonders when things stopped feeling simple. When he stopped feeling, can't wait to get out of here, and started feeling, I hope things are different when we're out of here. He considers Mingyu, cradling the jar in his good hand and balancing the torch with the other, and realizes a beat too late that the air has changed, that he paused too long to pinpoint it, and now Mingyu is too far away. But nothing about this split-second moment feels right anymore. If Sun Guan were thinking clearly, he would have called out, yelled, move, or shouted Mingyu's name. But the lack of sunlight, or the extended proximity to Kim Mingyu, or just something about these caverns, has gotten to his brain, because Sun Guan hears the little click, out of place in the dripping quiet, and swivels his head in time to see a suspiciously organized horizontal line of little openings appear on the wall, and his only reaction is run. Mingyu is too far away. He's not safe. Sun Guan takes off at a sprint toward Mingyu, and all he can hear is the little thump of the first arrow in the series behind him, and the roaring of his blood in his ears. Mingyu must hear his urgent footfalls, though, because he turns, face illuminated with the torch, and his face changes. He shoves the jar in Sun Guan's satchel where it slung over his shoulder and sets down the torch, but he's not moving. Why isn't he moving? Go on, go! Sun Guan manages to yell after too long. The arrows keep launching, and Mingyu fucking waits, holding out his good hand for Sun Guan like a relay. Sun Guan's feet beat a relentless rhythm into the dusty floor as he sprints closer, closer, closer to him. And when he approaches, he grabs for Mingyu's hand, lacing their fingers like their lives depend on it. And they kind of do. Come on, come on, come on. Sun Guan's brain and his heart pound in time with his pace, Mingyu keeping in perfect step with him, as the arrows seem to launch unfathomably faster from either side of them. What could have triggered this? Mingyu heaves between heavy breaths. Sun Guan doesn't know, and he doesn't have the faculties to even begin to answer. Not when his air supply is screaming through his lungs, and the whiz of arrows scream between them. All he can hope is that they're going the right way, that the last day and a half of journeying have brought them close to the finish line, that Mingyu's hand stays tight in his, and they can do this, and they can make it out. Together, or not at all. There. There is an inlet. A blink and you'll miss it, person-sized opening in the wall. And without hesitation, Sun Guan pushes Mingyu through first, following as closely behind as he possibly can, pressing his face into Mingyu's back. They burst through the path, flooded with light, and collapse against the stalagmites, crumpled together along the wall. For minutes, years, eons. All there is the thundering roar of their ragged breathing, and Sun Guan's forehead knocked against Mingyu's, and all the adrenaline in Sun Guan's body crying, he's safe, he's safe. Oh, God, Sun Guan says when he can manage it, and feels a watery prick behind his eyes, so he keeps them squeezed shut for fear of openness. Their tightness echoes like the vice-like grip of his fingers in Mingyu's. He thinks maybe if he lets go, he'll stop breathing. Oh, God. Sun Guan, you're bleeding. Mingyu gasps suddenly, and Sun Guan is almost unsurprised, eyes opening slowly. His gaze follows Mingyu's to a spot below his ribs, his khaki shirt blooming damp with maroon. Sun Guan knows better than to touch it, letting out a little hoarse laugh instead. I sure am. He says, taking one step, then a second, before his knees shake and he leans against the wall instead. Mingyu's hand tightens unforgivably in Sun Guan's, then releases altogether, quick like a lightning strike. Wish you wouldn't let go, Sun Guan thinks, then laughs aloud at how ludicrous that is. It's Kim Mingyu, and they're in a cave maze, and Sun Guan is bleeding profusely from an arrow wound, and things are all going a little blurry around the edges. He lifts his head, looks around for a moment just to get his bearings, and, oh. Mingyu,
Sungwan says, and it comes out like a question. Swallowing, Mingyu smiles. It's a facade, and Sungwan knows because he's very good at putting them on. Yes, Sungwan-ji, he replies, a teasing lilt to it, a bandage plastered haphazardly over the worry. We're close to the end. It's there. Sungwan points to the opening that's backlighting Mingyu, casting a golden halo around his sweaty face and dirty pushed back hair. Clearly Mingyu hadn't noticed it. He turns his head to look and laughs, a manic laugh of relief that tells Sungwan it's okay to close his eyes and lean in close. Yeah, that's it, Sungwan, he says. And something is tight about his voice when he pulls Sungwan close. We're there. Sungwan reaches a hand up, peeks his fingers under Mingyu's eyelashes with as much finesse as he can muster, despite the ever-growing throbbing pain at his side, and feels wetness gathering there. Don't you dare say anything, Mingyu mutters warningly, and Sungwan laughs weakly, but doesn't, because he's worried the thick, teary feeling in his throat is going to rise up and spill out of his eyes, too. And then where would he be? Crying in Kim Mingyu's arms, steps away from freedom, and that's not how Sungwan wants to go out. So he grits his teeth and takes another step, then another, and lets Mingyu support his weight as they hobble closer. I hope things are different when we're out of here, he thinks. There are two iridescent beetles, wings shimmery and red, dancing around each other in the corner of his eye. And when the air changes, the opening swallows them, and that first ray of sun burns its beam into Sungwan's skin, he collapses. Sungwan gasps awake suddenly, and the first thing he realizes is he can't see anything because his vision is hot white with light. Oh, right. The sun. Oh, easy, Kwana. Sokman is shushing him. Sungwan jolts up, wincing at the dull ache radiating from his side. Sokman presses at his shoulder to lie him back down, and Sungwan throws an arm over his eyes. Don't treat me like a fucking horse, Sokyong, he grits out. Sokman laughs, pushing Sungwan's shirt up to his ribs to look closer at the wound and replace the dressing. Good to know Danyang Caverns didn't break your spirit, just your bones. Sungwan's face must look alarmed, because Sokman's eyes go wide. Sorry, turn a phrase. Your bones aren't broken. Sungchul said they're good. Oh, thank God. Sungwan breathes, then sits up, knocking Sokman's arm aside. Wait, no, where's... Mingyu is fine. No bones broken, either, Sokman says, tone soft and a little apologetic. Sungwan feels his cheeks heat up, and the knowing smile Sokman gives him makes him groan out a sigh. How did this happen? The sun is going down. Sungwan can tell from the way the light is moving in the tent, and he's torn between pride and worry. Sokman has never judged him, and probably never will, but something in Sungwan is curled up, protecting its young in his cavernous heart. Whatever it's guarding is new. He wants to bare his teeth and keep it close. Sokman is the best, because he just smooths Sungwan's hair and says, he's in the other medic tent. I'm going to meet Soon Young at Camp Center for dinner. I'll have them save you some. Thank you, Sungwan says with a stressed sigh, and Sokman laughs kindly. Love you too, Sungwan. Sokman is almost out of sight when he tosses over his shoulder like an afterthought. You look awful. But you look better. Watching Sokman's silhouette get smaller and smaller, Sungwan swings his feet over the edge of his cot, taking a deep breath to feel the blood pulse through his veins, throb at his side. But he hops down gently and pads quietly, bare feet through grass. Grass. Sweet, warm, soft grass. Toward the other medic tent. No sooner does Sungwan step through the threshold than Mingyu is up like a shot. Quicker than a dart on wobbly legs. Of course his shirt is off again, because Sungwan truly cannot catch a break, even if, realistically, he knows it was for Sokman to apply salve and administer the appropriate medical attention to whatever myriad poisons and curses the human body can withstand.
Realistically, Sungwan also knows Sakmin is currently eating dinner with Soon-young, and that buys him a solid chunk of time, at least an hour, maybe even two if they really get to chatting, before it gets properly dark and Sakmin comes back to the medical area to offer Mingyu dinner, probably. So he moves in to check on Mingyu. That's all. You don't have to stand up. Sungwan laughs, his stomach tightening. But his eyes flicker between Mingyu's chest and his hand white gripping the edge of the medical cot. You came back for me? Mingyu says, wide-eyed and pleased surprised. But when Sungwan stammers to think of a rebuttal to that, a little distracted by the golden sight before him, he smirks and tugs Sungwan close by the belt loop. Fucking insufferable, Kim Mingyu. Scoffing, but unable to keep the smile off his face, Sungwan starts, "Ha, you're so..." Mingyu's mouth swallows the rest of his sentence, whatever it would have been, if Sungwan had bothered planning out what he was going to say, and his arms wrap around Sungwan, tight as a vice. "God, God, God," Sungwan kisses Mingyu like a man starved, leaning up on the balls of his feet to let Mingyu devour him. The feel of Mingyu's mouth against his is hot and breathy and so fucking good. And his hands keep moving, and Sungwan's only human. He presses closer, ever closer with each passing second, like they weren't just trapped in labyrinthine caves for days, no one but each other. Like Sungwan has to compensate for each spike of adrenaline and swoop of fear he had when Mingyu was in danger in the tomb with a desperate, filthy kiss. Like he can't quite say any of it aloud yet. So he has to trace it with his tongue against Mingyu's, gasp it into his mouth when their hips knock together. All he can manage is, "You gotta stop getting yourself almost killed, young," Sungwan pants, tilting his head to let Mingyu trail kisses down his neck, letting out an unbecoming squeak when Mingyu sucks hard at a spot well above his collarbone. Sungwan half hopes the old bats on the tenure committee see it blooming eggplant purple when he comes back. Dares them to look him in the eye and say he hasn't earned the right to it for everything he's done for them, and this week isn't even the half of it. Humming sweetly, Mingyu murmurs, "Almost isn't anything without the risk," and lifts his hands to unbutton Sungwan's ragged shirt, making sure to be careful of the bandage at Sungwan's side when he pushes the linen over Sungwan's shoulders. "This is sexy," he says. It makes Sungwan go warm all over. Seeing Mingyu's eyes soften, and watching him trace his fingertips over the mottled muslin square under Sungwan's ribs, even as they're both half-bare. A soft little thing that Sungwan can tuck away in a private corner of himself, along with the peak of Mingyu's teeth when he smiles, and the shape of the beetle from the cavern. "I'm glad you think so, since it's your fault I got it in the first place," Sungwan huffs, choking on the exhale when Mingyu pulls Sungwan's hands to his waist and leans in to kiss him again and again, messy and good. Between kisses, Mingyu insists, "Well, it's not like you were stabbed. It was just an arrow, and an old one at that. I think the onyx they used for the tip had softened quite a lot due to the humidity, and I hope you start babbling something different when I fuck you," Sungwan says. And this effectively shuts Mingyu up with a whine. "Oh, fuck. Please," he breathes with eagerness, which makes Sungwan laugh. "That's more like it." Sungwan tangles his fingers in Mingyu's hair for purchase, gently pulling his head back and earning a breathy moan torn from his throat. There's a promise glimmering in Mingyu's eyes, something like, "When I'm not recuperating from an ancient curse coursing through my veins, I want you to ruin me." And Sungwan wants to promise him right back. "I like it when you laugh," Mingyu says, dropping to his knees, Sungwan's hand still in his hair. He leans forward into Sungwan's touch and mouths at the fly of Sungwan's fresh, clean jodhpurs, pressing kisses to the fabric just under his waistband. Sungwan would laugh more, due to incredulousness, or the ridiculousness of the last few days, or the sheer disbelief that it all ended up here. He would laugh, if he weren't so busy trying not to groan at the feeling of Mingyu's tongue tracing the line where he's growing hard in his pants. Sungwan's hand tightens in Mingyu's hair,
soft and clean between his fingers, and Mingyu hums the happy little noise. He reaches his good arm up to undo the button, and tugs Sungwan's pants and underwear down his thighs side by side in sort of a wiggling motion, which Sungwan finds painfully endearing. He catches himself feeling fond, knows coral pink heat is blushing up his cheeks at the emotion. He doesn't have much time to dwell on it. Mingyu is palming at Sungwan's ass, rough warm fingers kneading at the flesh of it, and Sungwan lets out a strangled sort of moan that only gets worse when Mingyu looks up at him with this smirky little look, eyes huge and pretty, and licks open mouth down the length of Sungwan's dick, hand firm on his backside to keep him close. Jesus, Sungwan manages, and Mingyu giggles, working his hand over Sungwan, and he has this dumb smile playing on his lips even when he's getting his mouth around Sungwan, sucking him off like it's a reward? Something he earned? It feels good, so good. He wants this so badly, but there's something Sungwan needs to say, needs to make sure Mingyu knows, really knows. And there are some things where, if you can't say them with your cock nudging at the back of someone's throat, it's a lost cause. Sungwan is done feeling lost. Yum, gasps Sungwan, trying not to chase Mingyu's mouth with his hips as Mingyu bobs his head smoothly. He is far too good at this. Young, I need... Oh... The plushness of Mingyu's pink mouth is an unbelievable sight when he pulls off and sits back on his heels to relieve his knees, teasing, "Gonna come already, Sungwanchi, so soon." He sounds half disappointed, and his pout is something awful. Sungwan is overtaken with a deep desire to kiss it off his face. It's a testament to the way Mingyu has gotten under his skin that Sungwan still scoffs disdainfully, even as his cock is hard, spit wet and messy, and his heart is hammering in his chest. "No, you menace. I'm trying to tell you how I feel," he says, the edge sharp with earnestness. "Oh, is that all?" Mingyu says, and the words are teasing and cavalier, but the tone with which he says it is small, disbelieving, a little reverent, and worst of all, excited. Sungwan smiles despite himself. "Yeah, that's all. Is that all right?" Mingyu wipes his mouth with the back of his good hand to smile back, big and goofy. "More than. Can we kiss some more?" he asks, and it makes Sungwan laugh in agreement, so Mingyu pushes up to stand, giving Sungwan a free moment to climb onto Mingyu's cot. The look on Mingyu's face when he swings a leg over Sungwan's waist and leans down to kiss him again says it all. But something about it makes Sungwan want to make him say it out loud. If not now, sometime. God knows neither of them usually shut up anyway. And when Mingyu's lips press against his, soft and sweet, Sungwan lets out a sigh, sliding his hands over Mingyu's stomach, his waist, his hips, fingertips skating over a few healed-over wounds, scars from months or years ago, by the looks of it. "Make a habit of getting into scrapes," Sungwan teases gently against Mingyu's mouth, running a thumb over a particularly nasty scar at the side of Mingyu's tummy. Something like a blend of wonder and worry tangles in his own stomach about it. Mingyu leans back and smiles, bites his lip a little, says, "Depends. Is it sexy if I say yes?" Instead of responding, Sungwan rolls his eyes, and Mingyu's reactionary laughter dies in his throat when Sungwan's hands move to untie his pants, palming him through the linen-cotton blend. He murmurs, "Wish you would be more careful, young," and hears Mingyu hum softly in acquiescence. "He's just so pretty." Mingyu lifts up onto his knees for a moment so Sungwan can tug off what few clothes remain between them, and when he lets them flutter to the ground, gentle on the tarp, Mingyu is pushing his pillow closer to the small of Sungwan's back to prop him up. "This an okay angle?" Mingyu asks, kissing his fingertips and pressing them gently over the dressing at Sungwan's ribs. "Fuck. I want to ride you next time, but not now. This is going to get worse if I do. And that sure sounds like a promise. Fuck.
Nodding, Sungwan lets out a long exhale and smiles weakly at Mingyu.
I'll be careful.
The glint is back in Mingyu's eye at that, and he leans over to feel around on the medical tray beside his cot. Hopefully not too careful, he says. Rolling his eyes, Sungwan pulls Mingyu in by the back of the neck for a rough kiss, the press insistent and somehow not nearly enough. When he pulls back a little, Sungwan gazes darkly into Mingyu's eyes, and a little shiver runs through Mingyu as Sungwan's hands run up and down Mingyu's chest, thumbing roughly at his nipples and relishing in the airy way he whines in response.
You're so capable, Sungwan. So smart,
Mingyu says, pressing his hips into Sungwan's, and Sungwan lets out a strangled noise at Mingyu's dirty talk. But Mingyu presses on, breathing into his ear. You came alive in there.
Don't imply I'm some sort of fucking, mole person while her pants are off.
Sungwan squawks indignantly, scrunching his eyes closed when Mingyu sucks a bite at his neck, imagining there's a smile to it. Head tipped back, Mingyu doesn't really address the completely appropriate, honestly, complaint, just kicks back on his knees a little to find a better angle to slide his cock against Sungwan's, which as a reaction Sungwan might be able to understand, considering the low moan he lets out himself, and the way his hands fly to Mingyu's hips, gripping hard.
You have no idea how many times I've imagined you like this, Mingyu moans, and Sungwan feels his face flush even warmer than before.
Wish I could say the same, he manages to tease, and Mingyu glares at him, tipping out a little bottle of lubricant between them and hissing at the feeling. The obscene sound of the slick movement of their hips against one another is filthy and fantastic, and it makes Sungwan want to be at least a little honest. But now I don't think I'll be able to get it out of my head.
Mingyu bites his lip. That's more like it, he breathes, rolling his hips shamelessly, gorgeously.
With each passing moment, Mingyu is letting out all these breathy, giggly little whines, rocking in Sungwan's lap. And Sungwan is gripped with the unfortunate realization that he would do anything to make him keep making these sounds. Do anything generally for Mingyu to keep looking at him like this, all warm and soft and pleased. It's a lot to manage. Mingyu whimpers, arching his back as he desperately moves his hips back and forth. And Sungwan is dangerously close to coming. But he wants to take care of Mingyu first, so his hips cant up to meet Mingyu where he's moving desperately, taking one hand off his hip to wrap around Mingyu's dick and start bringing him closer to the edge in earnest.
Come on, young, Sungwan purrs. Come on, baby.
And it must be the term of endearment that does it, because Mingyu's hips stutter, and he comes with a keening whine over their stomachs, head tossed back and neck exposed, golden and smooth. Somewhere in his mind, Sungwan wants to remind himself to tease Mingyu about it later. But for now, he just speeds up his hand on his own cock, watching with focused eyes as Mingyu comes down from his orgasm and blinks languidly at Sungwan. He smiles at Sungwan, a little shy but bright, 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 and Sungwan's stomach tenses, and he tips over the edge with a cry. When Sungwan's breathing evens out, Mingyu is half holding him up with his good arm, the corded muscle flexing handsomely, and it makes Sungwan want to roll his eyes at just how attractive this man is. On the other hand, what's the point of playing coy at this juncture, except to save face? Sungwan sucks in a deep breath, and offers Mingyu what's undoubtedly a red-cheeked smile. He thinks maybe he doesn't need to work so hard anymore. As he leans forward, one hand at Mingyu's jaw, Sungwan wants to tell him somehow all the things he'll get around to confessing for real eventually. but for now he kisses him slow and deep, and considers the fact that there's nothing wrong with a little teasing anyway. So, you were so turned on at your faculty panel by me being mean to you that you... Sun Quan eyes Mingyu with bemused interest, smirking and flicking his eyes up and down his body, even as Mingyu is wiping himself down one-handed with some degree of difficulty. It's endearing, and Sun Quan is feeling a little too boneless to push the fondness down. Mingyu groans and wiggles a little, clambering off Sun Quan and standing up to tug his pants on a little awkwardly. Stop looking at me like that. I'll get hard again. You're so embarrassing, Sun Quan says, but he's stifling a smile as he cleans himself off, eyes cast downward at his trousers. He can't find his button down, and it kind of hurts to bend, but as soon as he turns around, Mingyu is standing in front of him, Sun Quan's clean-ish shirt clutched to the beautiful expanse of his chest, right over his heart. I think this belongs to you, Wu Sun Quan Chi, Mingyu says, ears pink but eyes shining. Cheesy. He looks handsome and open, heart glinting golden in the setting sun, like something brand new. Sun Quan wraps his arms around Mingyu's waist and leans up to kiss his cheek, the brush of lips chaste and warm. You know, Kim Mingyu Shi, I think it does. Cursebreaker is not technically a job title, but becoming the foremost experts on the long-term effects of poisons and minerals used by ancient and pre-modern civilizations is a little wordy. And frankly, Sun Quan isn't entirely convinced that the work that he and Mingyu do is purely scientific. More than once, there's been something much more powerful at play. At the very least, he understands now that no science, even social science, can be done without being driven by passion, something he and Mingyu certainly are no strangers to. And there's just something about Kim Mingyu that makes Sun Quan want to get sentimental. Curse-free guaranteed, Ming Hao says slyly, sliding the little velvet box across the desk to push against Sun Quan's open palms. Sun Quan snorts. Don't say that too loud, you'll disappoint him. Ming Hao rolls his eyes and takes off his spectacles, leaving them dangling from his neck on their chain. You don't have to tell me twice. He told me about the brass and garnet ring. Hiding his face in the box as he opens it, Sun Quan says, "You fuck the curse out of a man one time, and it's the only story he ever tells." I wish it was the only story he tells, Ming Hao mutters, but Sun Quan barely registers it. Inside the deep red of the velvet box lies a blanket of gauzy brown silk, atop which rests the golden brooch, their beetle, the genuine exoskeleton, scarlet chitin surrounded by nouveau-style gold, wings outstretched. Sun Quan pulls Ming Hao into a hug. It's perfect. Thank you, Hyung. Patting Sun Quan on the back kindly, Ming Hao says, "Of course. It's not every day I get to be the first jeweler to use a newly discovered and named specimen in his work," and he grins when he pulls away. And it sounds transactional, but the proof it's the opposite is in the way Ming Hao settles comfortably into Sun Quan's big leather chair, legs spread like he owns the place, and in the way the tinsel and garland are carefully strung around his office, put up with the warm, steady hand of someone much taller than Sun Quan. It's in the way Hansel crowds in next, Chun and Jisoo in tow, and the way they waste no time uncorking the champagne, Chun deftly catching any overspill in another glass rather than letting it drip onto Mingyu's desk and making his work all sticky. It's in the way Jisoo has one broad hand at the small of both of their backs, but still winks at Sun Quan when he fiddles to tie a bow around his little velvet box. It's in the way Sokmin and Sungchul had shifts at the university hospital they couldn't miss, but left their gifts for everyone with Soon-young, who burst into holiday song the moment he stepped through the doors of the social science building, his musical bellow making the china cabinets filled with Sun Quan's unprocessed artifacts rattle just a little worryingly, and in the same hand making everyone groan fondly before he's even in the office for the party. But more than anything, it's in the way Mingyu's eyes light up when he walks into their office, hearing the crackle of the record player in the corner crooning his favorite holiday ballad, and in the way he greets everyone warmly, but opens his hand above Sun Guan's face to reveal very bruised mistletoe. "You didn't," Sun Guan says with a groan, scrunching up his nose with fond embarrassment. "But you want to kiss me," Mingyu sing-songs, with, annoyingly enough, perfect emotional accuracy. So Sun Guan does, with a hand to the back of his neck, and more fervor than they're usually allowed at school. Sun Guan's heart races a little, but his other hand feels steady where it holds the little red box behind his back, and the smile on Mingyu's face lets him know that maybe opening himself up was the right choice. He feels good about it. Making some progress, doing something greater than himself, unfurling vermilion wings, iridescent in the sun. The end.